I want to take you on a journey that I have enjoyed. It's a study that has made me happy. There are times in your life when you know things and you know better, but you don't always do better. And I think that for me, this is a story that surprises me. It's in the book of 1 Samuel chapter 8, and it starts at verse 1. So get your Bible out. Let me read it for you. So when Samuel grew old, and he appointed his sons as Israel's leaders, the name of his firstborn was Joel, the name of his second was Abijah, and they served in Beersheba. But his sons did not follow his ways. They turned aside after dishonest gain and accepted bribes and perverted justice. Now, what's interesting about this story is this is a story about a guy that we looked at last week. Samuel was the child that was mentored by a guy named Eli. Eli was a guy who got in all kind of trouble, incredible trouble. And he lost his way. And then the Lord blessed Samuel to have a chance to see failure up close. I mean, this is a guy who saw it happening. He saw it happening up close and personal. Well, what's interesting is just because he saw it up close and personal, it didn't stop him from losing his way. Some of you know somebody who's done this. So I want to pray for you today. Then I'm going to jump into a message you don't want to forget. Let's pray. Father, I pray for people today who knew better, who saw better, who understood the downside of certain decisions, but they made them anyway. So I pray the Holy Spirit would help this to be a time of healing and grace in Jesus' name. Amen. So this is a story about a guy, as I said, who saw his mentor fail. Eli disobeyed God, allowed his children to disrupt the temple, steal money, sleep with the women. It was horrible. And he confronted them and said, all right, you guys, this is all bad what you're doing. But he did not stop them. Now, you would think after watching four of his family members die in one day, after watching the terrible prophetic promises that God made to him, God told him, I'm never going to let you go. I'm never going to forgive you for this because you've not repented. And there's this whole strong word in 1 Samuel chapter 2 that he gives to Samuel, to Eli. And what's amazing is Eli never apologized. He never repented, never said he was sorry. And so in Eli's story, you have a painful example. And you can relate to this. Your family members, you got people you know who knew better but didn't do better. And so you have this horrible story. He's a young child when he sees this. He grows up watching it all happen. And then he becomes a priest. So you think that he would use all of that as a reference and say, hey, you know, I saw this, I saw that, I'll never do it. Now, some of you have been there, right? You know, you saw your daddy on drugs, you saw your brother on drugs, you saw everybody in your family drink, and you said, I'm never going to do what they did. Never, 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 right? But now it's your turn. And you look at your life and your finances are a mess and your marriage is a mess, everything is messed up. All of this happens and you knew better. So when you read what I just read to you, before we went to break here, when Eli is gone, Samuel's in charge, and then the men come to Samuel and say, hey, we need to talk. Your sons are as bad as Eli's sons. They're doing things, they're sleeping with the women in the church, they're stealing money, they're stealing the offering back then. This is terrible. We don't want them to be our leaders. Now, this is an example of what happens when leadership doesn't confront things and you allow things to grow. So now you have the sins of Samuel's sons. And I have four things I want you to notice. Number one, they served on staff. They were paid. They were Levites. They were full-time paid staff. They did not follow the example of their father. Now, so understand, Samuel was a good guy. His children were not. They were dishonest and accepted bribes and perverted justice. They didn't treat people fairly. And then they lost the confidence of the people. This is so important. They lost the confidence of the people. You know, there are a lot of people don't go to church anymore because of stuff like this. They somehow think, you know, that, well, you know, nobody's perfect. So they allowed it to go on. And so now watch what happens. in the end, they end up asking for a king. They wanted somebody to replace Samuel because they said, when you leave, we don't want to be left with your children. Now, that's a powerful statement. So in verse 6 of 1 Kings chapter 8, they say, give us a king to lead us. That's what they wanted. They thought that somehow if they got a king, that would fix everything because everybody else around them had a king. Well, watch what happens in verse 8. The Lord responds and says, as they have done from the day I brought them up out of Egypt, this is in verse 8 of 1 Samuel chapter 8, until the day forsaking me and serving other gods as they are going to do, doing to you. He says, God says, well, they're forsaking you, Moses. I'm sorry, Samuel, not Moses. they're forsaking you the way they forsook me. And God says that's common. So notice that he is accepted. Now, what's tragic is, he says, what's going to happen, though, they're going to take your sons. They're going to determine your career path. They're going to take over your fields. They're going to take a tenth of your crop. If you read all the way down through verse 17, they're going to take your staff. If you got people working for you, they're going to take your staff from you. The people you got working your farms, they're going to come and take your staff. And they're going to take a tenth of your flocks. That's what you're going to get. So the bottom line is, he said, you're going to get a solution, but you're going to pay with a high price. So I call it a solution and forgetting the price. All this happens because Samuel forgot the lessons he learned from Eli. That's why I call it historically blind thinking. He saw it, but ignored it. So here's the question. What are you seeing and what are you ignoring? What do you know? You know this. You went through it. You started with your daddy, your mom, your cousin. You know drinking didn't hurt, didn't help your family. You know that these things didn't work. So now you're back where they were. Amazing. So God tries to remind them, but they are victims of naive thinking. Naive thinking. They're thinking it's okay. It's not going to be, we're not going to, it doesn't matter, but it does matter. And it's going to have a generational impact. Generationally impact everybody. And I'll talk more about that next time we come back to what I call walking away from foolish thinking. They stayed in the land of foolish thinking. Now, you would look at this and say, how is it possible? But look at your life and ask that question. Sometimes I've looked at myself and said, how did I do this to myself? How did I make this decision? And I've been there, and I'm trying to always learn from that. So those are a couple of quick thoughts about the text we're in, but I want to hear your thoughts and questions. I've got my trusty administrator, Sheila Bishop, is in the house, and she's with me today. Say hello, Sheila. Oh, you're on mute. We can't hear you. You got to unmute yourself. Miss Sheila's muted. We got to unmute Sheila. There you
go. Hello, everyone. Can you hear me now?
We can hear you.
Okay.
We can hear you. We got a bunch of people, Sheila, on here today. My goodness.
Yeah, I see.
Zaina's on here. Hey, Zaina. That's that basketball friend of mine. You know, she's always messing with me about basketball. And then we've got Janice is on here. Lydia's on here. There's a bunch of folks on here today. Good to see all y'all. So
that's a good sign, Pastor.
It's a really good sign. It is. So I know we're used to being in the building, and it was great. And I miss you folks. I wish I could reach out and touch you. So let me just pretend I'm touching you. But let's talk today, Ms. Bishop, about what we're talking about today. And I know you got some questions. Let me say, if you got questions, you got some issues, you know, you're dealing with people who have historically blind thinking, which means they've forgotten what happened in the past, and you got questions about that, we're going to jump into that conversation and talk about it a little bit. So we're going to be here until 8:15. So don't worry about your time. I promise you we're going to be out on time today. So get your questions, type them in the chat. We got Brian on standby and Sheila's over here. And if you got a question, even Diane. Diane's online too, y'all. My wife is watching.
Hi, Miss Simple.
You're watching. So tell me, if you would, some questions, Ms. Bishop, you got, and some questions people might want to ask me about this topic.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned at the beginning, well, just even in the title, avoiding historically blind thinking. I love that. I think that's your phrase that you came up with. You didn't really give yourself credit for it, but I love it. Because we do tend to forget. But one of the things that's fascinating to me about the study is this whole idea of Eli, and then you have that basically raised Samuel in the temple. Then Samuel has seen Eli live his whole life. He's seen, you know, he was one that had the privilege of delivering the message that God said, look, there's going to be a problem for you not chastising your son. And then he raises his children and repeats the same thing. I think that's just very fascinating. So, but just to hear from you, why do you think that parents tend to take a blind eye to their children, especially when they may be, you know, going a little bit wayward? Could you really speak to that?
You know, I got two children, Ricky and Christina, and I'm telling you, and two grandchildren. So it's four children. You call children in my life, but they're grown children, not two big ones. I think passion, you love them. You see this in David with his son Absalom. You see it throughout scripture and throughout life, you see it. You have such passion for people. I don't know who you love that much, your cousin, somebody in your life that you really care about. It's hard to hurt them. And sometimes you think the best way to help a person is to let them do what they do. I don't think so. The Bible says, those the Lord loves, he chastens. The word chasten is the word in the Greek that means to educate. The goal is he chastens and scourges those he loves. And there's a point where the best way to help somebody is not to be mean about it, but to speak the truth in love. What the fathers didn't do, Eli or Samuel, was they did not discipline their children. You love them so much so that you're hoping they change, but you don't demand change. I have learned that I have to draw lines and say, no, this is not going to be the case. One of my favorite lines as a daddy is, my name is not Eli nor Samuel. That's what I've said a few times here and there when I needed to say it. And I think, but I've also tried to be patient and foresee the evil. Because sometimes parents, you see it in your children. You see it, especially pastors' kids, people in leadership. You see, we need to have a meeting. Let's see if we can re-rack this. And so I think passion and their emotional weakness. And then let me just say, last thing I'm going to say, I love the study of emotional intelligence. I think it's just fabulous. And I hope you Google it. Emotional intelligence. There's a whole scholarly research material on that that's out there that's phenomenal. And there are two things about emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence has to do with me emotionally understanding and being intelligent about my emotions and the emotions of those around me, the people I'm interacting with. If I can get me clear and then be honest about what I'm dealing with, this is a person that will not work. This is a person that will not give money. This is a person that's not going to be responsible. As a pastor, you might find this fascinating, Sheila. I have to understand the emotional state of my church. That my church has a certain emotional state about it. Some churches are fantasy driven. Some churches are not, they're not confrontable. You can't say, we can't do it this way. Some churches can't be led. They're emotionally domineering. The pastor, they're unleadable. They're pastor killers. they do. Oh boy, I can tell you some stories. Anyway, I understand that, pastors can kill churches too. I'm clear about that. But anyway, that's my answer to that.
And we don't have any questions from the audience so far. So I want to ask another question. And I think what you just said about, other churches and the whole idea of emotional intelligence. But this is your 43rd year as pastor? Yeah. So 43 years. How have you managed to avoid some of the repetition or mishaps that other churches have done? I mean, I know you talk to a lot of pastors, you talk to a lot of people, and we're talking about historically blind thinking. So how have you been able to avoid some of the mishaps that other churches have done in terms of being able to speak to things?
Yeah, I want to be clear. This is 42 going on 43. 43 okay. Will be, you had to get my calculator out. 43 years pastoring, it'll be 44 years married, because I became a pastor on the day of my first anniversary.
Oh,
the day I was in the lobby waiting for us to go out to dinner while they were swearing me in. Do you promise to be a man of God?
And isn't it so powerful that still, she's still with you, helping you do it.
Oh, yeah, isn't she? And she's just dripping with love. Anyway, so I don't know, that's your question. You got me off.
No, I'm just saying, how have you managed to avoid some of the, we're talking about when you know better, you do better, things that you've seen in the case, again, of Eli and Samuel, they saw, you know, and one learned from the other, but they still made some of the same mistakes. How have you been able to avoid some common mistakes that other ministries have done?
I think there's one thing I would say that makes me different than those two guys. I would hope, I pray. I say that with humility. I don't think I have a pass. I don't think I have some secret
spiritual... like a P-A-S-S.
Yes, right. So I can, that doesn't apply to me. I think they lost sight of that. And that's what God told them. You put your sons before me. I think I've learned that there is a price you pay. And I fear it. I personally fear it. I don't play with God. I'm afraid that all that he's given me and honored me to have can be taken away. And I've seen that in the Bible. I've seen that in real life. So that's one of the ways I've avoided it. And then another thing is not being tired and being able to think and pay attention to where I'm at. If your pace is so fast that you can't see where you are. And I think that's what happens to a lot of people. Church is so demanding. Things are so on top of you that you can't see. Things start stacking on your life. And I think you start ignoring stuff because you really can go, and it's amazing, you can go 6 months to a year and not even notice you gained a bunch of weight. Not even notice that you don't even look in the mirror. It's like, I'm fine. And you pants is tight, everything tight. And you don't even notice that you're walking slow or that you are not as sharp in your thinking, that something's wrong. And I think a lot of that's because we're crowded. So I think what happens with these guys, you get really busy serving God, doing stuff, and you look up and 5 years have gone by and you haven't taken your wife out or your spouse out for lunch. It's amazing how fast time goes. Kids grow up fast. So you have to slow down, pace down. That's what's helped me too. Slowing down, having time to think, I think that makes a difference.
Okay. I think we have a comment here from Carolyn. Jeffrey, the boundaries that parents have to reset from their children to adult children is a hard reset, but a necessary step to future peace in your golden years. And pastor reference reading has helped. Will there be more gatherings, teachings on this subject and topic?
There will be.
Whole adult children. That's a perfect question. Considering
there is a book coming. We're going to do, well, in fact, we're doing it now. It's in one of our two book reads you can do. You know, we got one book that's called, ready, Sheila, it's called Accidental Pharisee, right?
Yes.
It's Overzealous Christians, Believers, Overzealous, that's a powerful book, Accidental Pharisee. And the next book, and I always forget the author's name, I'm not good at that. I have to watch myself at that one. I'll tell you in a minute, Accidental Pharisee. And then the other one is, we haven't talked about this one yet with the church, but Boundaries. The Boundaries series by Cloud can help with that. That's going to be
Peter
part
Cloud.
Of it. What did I say?
You just said Cloud.
Cloud, exactly right. Henry Cloud, that's his name. So Carolyn, we're going to be talking about that, and I promise you, it's going to be a great study. So, Accidental Pharisee, and then I don't know, Sheila, if you have the act. Who is the author of Act? His name is. Here it is. His name is Larry Osborne. Ta-da! Thank you, Brian. You're the great one. Larry Osborne, that's going to be a great book. But the other book is called The Adult Children. There it is. Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents by Lindsay Gibson. It's a great book, too. So those books will help with that. The parenting book will help a lot, too, Carolyn. So God bless you. All right.
If there's any more questions, feel free to put those in the chat, and we'll certainly take your questions. Pastor Rick, another thing that's interesting from the story is the people asked Samuel, said, you know, we want a king. And he basically, you know, God told him, yeah, go ahead. That's what they want. And all the different things that was going to happen. But as a leader, I guess it's kind of another question. I guess I'm asking nosy questions about your leadership. But as a leader, how has the voice of the people swayed you in their favor but it wasn't necessarily a good outcome, but didn't have necessarily a good outcome.
A lot of it, I'm not talking, for example, about money is one of the things I think in some ways, more as much as I think I need to. I think I'm doing something new. This thing I'm doing called the
Prosperity Team.
Prosperity Team. Yeah, there it is. I think if you don't deal with the basics, the fundamentals in your life, and people can sway you away from focusing on what really matters. And that's why slowing things down matters. And so I'll mention that later on. Remind me to talk about that Prosperity Team. But I'm asking people to join me. I'm thinking to do a series of new studies that focus just on money, just finances. And if you don't want to deal with money or finances, then I understand. But I'm looking to, we've got over 100 people in one day. It's already amazing. 100 people signed up for it. So they're going to put up, not now, but they're going to put up the cue card for that in just a little bit. But I want to say you need to consider being a part of that. And so that's one thing. So in terms of what I've been swayed away from, I think I've been pretty steadfast and I've avoided the traps that those two guys fell into so far. I pray I continue, but it's very easy to do that. I think what gets you in trouble, and this is where I thought you were going to go with your question. I think as a leader, you fall victim to fantasy.
Oh.
And there's something I call caricatures, like cartoons, Bugs Bunny and all those guys, all the, it's not real, but you think it's real. Star Wars is not real. It's not real. Superman can't fly. I mean, those are caricatures. We have the same thing in religious environments, mm-hmm. where we build things up and we think we have a past and we don't pay attention to the details. Our marriage is falling apart. Our body is falling apart. Our life's falling apart. Everything, our finances is falling apart. And we are ripping and running. Guys like me tend to be all over the country all the time, always gone. Always busy. People, when they deal with me, they say, oh, you're so busy. How do you deal with being busy? And I think, I'm not that busy. I'm busy, but I work ahead and my sermons are done a month or two out, which is a wonderful life, because you're not living under that get it done by Sunday, Saturday night and all that craziness. And so I think these guys lost sight and started falling into fantasy and caricature thinking, and they just cartoon thinking. They just didn't think in the present. And I think that's what gets you in trouble. And I think it hurts people.
And Wendy has a question, Pastor. She said, walk us through just a little bit more. Walk us through as to how you would have handled the children of Eli and Samuel as a father and a leader. Could you just elaborate a little bit more on that from your perspective?
My children are not online, but if they were, it'd be fascinating to hear them tell you their stories. my wife, I won't put on the spot, but I'll say this. I have a rule. This is my rule. I don't hire anybody I won't fire. That's my rule. My mother wanted to work for me and I told her no. I said, because I don't want to fire you. And she said, why are you sassy? Because I know you, mama, I love you dearly, but no, God bless her in heaven. She's in heaven now, but I wouldn't hire my mother because I know my mother wasn't going to do right. Because I'm a son and all that jazz. She's a hard worker, but we have too many dynamics every now and then. So I said no. But anybody that worked for me, I would have. My kids would tell you, Daddy would have stopped us from the gate, First Street. My rule is, if there's 100 avenues, First Avenue, Second, 10th, 50th Avenue, 20th Avenue, and all that. My rule is, when you do it on First Street, by Second, I'm talking to you. I don't wait. Now, that's not, ask anybody who works for me, they'll tell you, he will speak to you. He cares, see, and he will say something. I think that was the problem. So I would have said something, and I would have, they wouldn't have another chance. Once you let me know in your spirit that you're not changing, it would have been over. They would have had to go find a job, fishing or something.
Well, on that same note, though, one of the things I've heard you reference was your job description and how we have perceptions about things based on what we think out. So your job description as a parent, as a father, is, I would assume that tolerance is a part of that. You want to give them time to mature, time to grow. So how long should you give them? I mean, some of these things maybe the children were doing was just because they were immature?
Well, I think it depends on what it is. My view is you should see what you see. And if I see you have a rebellious spirit early, then we deal with that early. And that's when you little. That's not when you big. I think you grow your monsters. And sometimes they grew their monsters. Their kids felt, David's kids, Absalom was the same way. He was worse than them. I can't say worse, but yeah, he's pretty bad. Yeah, well, they're all the same. I mean, he killed some people too. Absalom did. Killed his own brother in front of everybody at a family gathering. I mean, it was a mess. I mean, these people, some of them in the Bible, and that's why you know the Bible is so powerful a book, because it tells the truth about the ugly side of life. And so I just think you have to, and when you see it, say something, and you have to act, and he didn't. Eli gave his sons a lecture, but he never did anything. And God referenced that. He said, you preferred your children before me. I refuse to do that. I think that is unhealthy, dangerous, and I think God will get you. So that's my answer to that.
Do you think, we got another question here, but let me ask you this. When the whole idea of blind thinking, do you think that blind thinking is just simply a choice of will? A choice of a person's will to see what they see or not see? Is it just that simple, or?
I think it's cultural sometimes. I think churches are blind. They're blind thinkers. I mean, as a group, I think we are very fantasy driven. We don't see the truth about a lot of things. Let me give you an example. You don't know what the average church's finances are like because they don't tell you. If you ask them, they'll avoid it, run around. And so they think the church had a lot of money, and churches don't have money. If only 4% of churches ever get above $1 million. 4% out of 350,000 churches in America, 4% get above $1 million in income. It is, they don't have a lot. And so they run around talking about they're blessed, but they're tight. They spend about, you ready? 45-50% on salaries. They spend 30% on housing themselves. That's 70%. And then after that, they have to pay their light, phone, and gas bill. That's why they sell chicken. They don't have any money. They don't have any money. And so my point is, I think they just don't, they think the way they think. They have a job description that they've adapted that's not necessarily true. They think they're supposed to win the whole world of God by themselves. Mm-hmm. I'm not the only one that's got to do everything for overcome by faith. I think there'll be next generations that can do things. There's some things that I will do. There's something the next pastor will do. But my goal is to not think blindly, but to think with my eyes open so that I don't make foolish decisions. And I'm trying hard to do it right, but it's not easy. Now, you're just growing and learning. And that's what I'd say.
We have a comment from Joycelyn, and she said, God punished everyone's in Eli's house because of all those in his household knew what Eli's sons were doing. And or were they all guilty of dishonoring their position as priest and dishonoring God?
There's a verse in Matthew in Exodus 20, Joycelyn. Hey, Joycelyn, that says God said he'll visit your sins on your children to the third and fourth generation. There is a consequence. There are things that Ricky Temple can do. That has There are things that Ricky Temple has done that's led my children to have a better experience. For example, my kids have no student loans. That's a generational blessing. My kids, their first car, we paid for them. They never paid for their first cars. There will be at least $5 left for each of them when I die. At least $5. At least $5. Fool yourself. I ain't trying to leave it all to them. I'm trying to live and enjoy myself now, trust me. But my point is, there is a generational consequence. You see this throughout the Bible. You know, when Achan in the book of Joshua, if you remember, he stole the garment and he kept what was supposed to be given to God for himself. There's a message in that for people who don't give anything to keep all their money to honor God and their tithes and offerings. I firmly believe you should honor God first. That's my view, but let's go past that. The first, because 60% of people in church don't do it. But here's the thing that I think is amazing. There is a generational consequence when you have drugs in a family. There's a generational consequence when fathers are taken out of the family. there's a generational consequence for being sexually irresponsible. When you sleep around and you have five babies from five people you don't know and don't like, now you got five people to pay and five baby daddy you don't like. And you know, and all that's because of that's a consequence tied to a set of choices. So I believe there is painfully a consequence. And sometimes people in your family could die early because of the decisions you make. For example, let's say you drink and you can hold your liquor. I mean, you can just sit there and just drink all day long. You can do all that and never die. But your children may not be that strong. And your grandkids may not be that strong. There are people today who look at their grandchildren and they see it. And you know this in the Bible. You know when the Bible said in Genesis, Noah said these words, cursed be Canaan.
Canaan, yes.
Right? Now Ham, remember it was Shem and Ham. Ham was the one, when he saw his father's nakedness, Ham looked at his father and the Bible said gazed at him. Now people imply all kinds of things from that, you know. But whatever he did was an embarrassment to the father. So when his father came to or wasn't drunk, you know, Noah was sobered up. So he was all happy because he had a big harvest. God blessed him, so he drank too much. And when he woke up, he done took his clothes off. See, he was the kind of drunk person, don't ever need to be drunk. Took all his clothes off. he became a stripper when he got high. He should never get high. Anyway. So that's why I ain't gonna drink it. I don't know what I might do. I ain't gonna drink nothing, but you see water. Praise Jesus. Water, maybe a little soda. I told y'all I ain't drinking because I might like it. But anyway, so he took all his clothes off. His son gazed at him. And then when his son, daddy woke up, he said, you know, son, that was terrible what you did. I'm paraphrasing it. And here's what he said to him. Cursed be Canaan. Now, he didn't say cursed be Ham. Here's what he was saying. He wasn't cursing black people because Ham was the father of all dark-skinned folks. That wasn't what he was saying. Or people from Africa, that wasn't what he was saying. What he was saying was, he mentioned his family. He mentioned his grandson. He basically was saying to him, you know, that same spirit that you demonstrated by looking at me, gazing at my nakedness, your son got that same spirit. He said, Kurt, your son's going to have hardship. He was pronouncing a generational reality. Look at Genesis chapter 50. And listen to what Joseph's father, Jacob, prophesied about the future of his children. He talked about the things they did and the long-term consequences. That's what generational judgments are. And he was saying, this is what I see. You're violent. You're not responsive. You're abusive. You don't listen. So your consequence will be, and he listed things that would happen to them, and they did. So I just think it's a powerful, powerful story when you think of it, by the way. So that's a great question.
Pastor Rick, one of your favorite people, Jewel, she said, yes, generational consequences, transgressions, iniquities, and sin, and explain the difference. And then just to, from there, Brittany has a question that may tie into that whole thing. How do you correct an 11-year-old behavior when it's already gotten out of hand? Anger, name calling? And how can those generational curses be broken?
First, you got to start. You have to face them. And then you just take one element at a time. And sometimes going to counseling might be the best way. You may end being a place where that's the next best step. If you're not equipped to deal with it, and if you're not good, don't give up. Go find some help. Because some things that have grown into the person could be tied to something. When you see behavior like that, something might have happened to the person that they didn't tell you about. Very seldom have I seen people act out like that and something didn't happen. Something happened somewhere. And what I do, I'd ask the person, say, why are you so angry? Why do you say bad words like that? Talk to me. Every time I try to express myself, you silence me, you know? And they may be telling the truth, you know? Are you contributing to their anger? The Bible said, don't provoke your children to wrath. What is it about our family? Some families don't get, and this is what I really believe, atmosphere is important. I feel that way in the church. Do you know why I make sure we start on time and end on time in church? One of my reasons, atmosphere. I believe that people, number one, need to have a reliable time to come, a reliable time to leave, and they need to leave together so they can talk in fellowship. It's all about atmosphere. I try to make the sermons helpful, specific, short, not too long, because atmosphere, their attention span. So my point is, if your house is a mess, if things are all over the place, if it's always rushed in the morning, rushed in the evening, you don't have anything planned, everything is last minute, you never take vacations, you never have anything, any time to rest, sometimes you grow angry people. And those kind of reactions are a sign that this person is saying, I don't like this life. I don't like this atmosphere. Change the atmosphere and you might change everything. I'm going to give you a secret. You ready? I'm going to give you a secret. I know that I have a Diane who is sane today. He is. But I have a secret plan. Diane, cut your computer off. I'm finna talk to the people. I want you listening. Secret, this is my secret plan. I found that certain things make her better. Vacation is one of them. She needs to vacate. She is not a nice person if she's tired and not rested. When vacation time comes around, she changes. All right, it's vacation time. So I make sure that I support that whole process. And so she needs to know where I'm at. There's certain about accountability. There's certain things that, you know, I'm not on some string, but she just wants to know where her husband is. She wants me to not be all over the world all the time. She told me her greatest fear of me is that I would be going across the horizon. Now, I said all that to say, you've got to find out in your environment what the people around you need. That person who's 11 years, who's acting like that for 11 years, I want to know why they are like that. What do they feel? What's their view of our life? Do you fuss at them all the time? Do you cuss at them all the time? What is it that they deal with? Sometimes the kids in public school, and that kid needs to be homeschooled. Every time he goes to school, he get crazier. He can't, them kids just run them crazy. You might say, well, maybe it's my job. Yeah, your job, maybe you need to change jobs. Your family culture, I try to create a culture here. Neatness, organization, all that helps my family. Wife, Diane, all of them. Christina, there's a way that they think. Ricky, RJ, all of them. There's a way I have to deal with them in order to make the place a better environment. So when I see behavior like that, I try to go to the root of it. That's my answer.
We have a question here from Carlos. Have parents lowered their standards? Have we settled by accepting their discretions because we praise or accept their small accomplishments? For example, overlooking smoking and drinking because they keep a job and are not in jail.
Well, I mean, smoking and drinking is about bad as the overeating too. I mean, I don't know who wants to pick on. I mean, we can pick on those two things. But
no,
I
guess what they're saying is you feel like, oh well, you know, they may be smoking and drinking, but at least they're not in jail. So
I think it's great. I think that, but that's to me, there's a bigger question, Carlos. The bigger question is what is it that you're bothered by? You know, are we spoiling? I think the question was, are we spoiling them? Is that what he said?
Well, have we lowered our standards and have we settled, you know, by accepting their indiscretions because we praise or accept their small accomplishment?
It sounds like we're talking about an adult.
We're just glad they're not in jail so they can, as long as they're not in jail.
But we sound like we're talking about an adult child, first of all. That's what it sounds like to me. Okay. And I don't know that I am lowering my standard when I adjust to how Ricky thinks or how Christina thinks, and he's 41 and she's 36. I think I'm adjusting to them being adults. I think there's a big difference. See, the problem with Eli and Samuel, they didn't adjust to the adult requirements. They did lower their standards. That you shouldn't do. You shouldn't let them make you sin. You shouldn't partake in their sins. You know, but to me, if he gonna smoke and drink, I don't want to do that. But if they try to do that, I may go, hey man, you think about that. You know, I'll try to talk you out of it, but I don't have the power to change your life. You know, in the Bible, one of the great lessons, and you might know this, there are no discussions in the Bible about bad two-year-olds. Oh. There's no discussion in the Bible about bad elementary school kids, middle school kids, or high school kids. Maybe high school, maybe, but very few. You have one little story about Elijah being called bald head by some children. That's one story. You don't have a lot of that in the Bible. The biggest challenges are with adult children. From Adam and Eve forward, it's always about adult children. And parents, you don't have that kind of power over them once they become adults because they have their own lives. I think the biggest thing you can do with your kids is influence them. So am I spoiling my kids' calls? I think I'm adjusting my standard to where they are because it's their life. But if they live with me, I'm not going to let them lower my standard. That's the problem with Eli and Samuel. They lowered their standard. Now, Carlos, like you said, they lowered their standard, but they lowered their standard and allowed sin. There's a big difference to live in their family and life and in their churches.
A couple of things here, Pastor Weekend. If there's any more questions, we still have time. But with our last 5 minutes, the
it's question that 8:15, we do,
sir.
We said 8:15.
Oh, we did. Oh, okay.
We got 2 minutes.
Good then. Okay. The question that you asked at the beginning of the study is: Are you repeating the failures of your fathers? And one of the things that I think about with family, I mean, you know, they decided for me to be the part of the family. I didn't get a vote. None of us get to vote, you know, which family we're going to be a part of. You're just like, hey, you're part of the Smith family. And when we think about repeating, you know, misfortunes or different things, and let's say you raised in a family that didn't have the kind of thinking that would give you, how do you, and maybe you've already spoken to somebody, how do you break out of that? How do you, when you think about the, you know, the misfortunes of the past, or what would you say to people that like, okay, I need to get out of this? You talked about, I think you said your mom said, don't live in the circle. How have you avoided living in the circle of?
When Don and I got ready, we were dating, we made a covenant that we were going to break generational curses. We were not going to repeat things we saw in our families that we felt were unhealthy. Okay. One of them was a whole unnecessary debt where you were in bondage, you know, how we lived in our house, keeping things clean, organized, all those things. And we felt vacations was important. So we came with a list and we vowed to each other and to our family environment and to our kids, this is what you're never going to have to deal with. Your daddy's not going to be running around with other women. Your mom's not going to be doing that. We're not going to be doing drugs and drinking in here. So we made a list of things. We're not perfect, but we stayed with a faithful list. I think you have to decide how you want to live. And then you have to say, am I willing to pay the price? I often say you go to the grocery store, you put all those things in the buggy, you get the checkout stand and you can't pay for it. I used to bag groceries when I was a kid in high school. And I never will forget how many people used to come to the checkout and didn't have the money. And I remember vowing I will never do that for that reason, because I had to help put stuff back. And I remember how embarrassing it was. And so I think that you have to decide what you want, put it in the buggy, and don't put so much in there you won't pay for it.
Okay. If there's any more questions, we can still take those. But you also said in your introduction, you know, when you know better, you do better. Mm-hmm. And what are some things that maybe, you know, that you've been tempted to ignore as it relates to money, your health, and business?
Well, first, business is hard because as a pastor, I'm not supposed to talk about business.
Oh.
It ain't no business. Church ain't no business. It's a king.
And I said, it's a lot of business.
Kingdom business. Maybe because you ain't got enough money and you ain't no people. But if you got a lot of things going on, you got hundreds and hundreds of people, you have a lot of business. You got to clean up. You got to pay for the lights, the phone, and all that stuff. So I think for me, it is being able to honestly say, this is where I'm at. That's what got Eli and Samuel in trouble. They were not honest. They got to a place where they lied to themselves. And that's something I have to constantly tell myself, just because it makes other people uncomfortable. And, you know, I give an example to me, and this is, I keep saying, because it's my recent issue. I looked at our church and I said, the pace is wrong. The pace is too fast. My pace is too fast. I need to slow down. And it's not because I'm 66, April 26th, by the way, write that down. I'm happy about my aging process.
And your party is on the 27th.
Exactly. At what time? 6 o'clock, right? 6 o'clock? Is it 6 o'clock? 6 o'clock. I'm telling you. Now, y'all come on out and have fun with me. It's going to be great. I think that because if you're not willing to face the truth about your life, you know, I'm facing truth right now. Let me kind of turn it left a little bit here. I'm facing the fact that I'm at the end of my ministry. 10, 15 years-ish. That's what I think. If I can stay healthy and do what I want to do. And if God doesn't bring somebody before then that we feel should take over the church, then, you know, but I'm coming near those at that time. I also realize that I have to be really focused on certain things. Health, I have to work out. I'm going to do when we get offline and I'm going to work out tonight. I have to make sure that I sleep. I have to make sure there are things. So I'm trying to face the truth. What these two guys didn't do, they thought, oh, we fine. You want fine. Everything was going down and they were ignoring him. And I think as a religious person or a spiritual person, that's what I can tend to do. I can tend to ignore what I see. So to me, if I do that, I think I'll be fine. If I don't do that, it'll be crash and burn. Like,
if there's any more questions, of course, we can still take those. But on the subject of thinking, is there just like this one thing that you would say, maybe three, since we have time, what are like three things you've done to just have better thinking, to think better, to improve your thinking?
I'm going to tell you the first one, Sheila, is this time.
Having time?
If you don't have any time, your day, if you look at your day and you're up running, ripping, trying to find the clothes to put on, and you run out the door and you go to work all day and you get off and then your kids eating and food and homework and grass not cut and you're trying to cut the grass and you're trying to, and then the laundry not done, and you're just crazy. You're crazy all day. You don't have any time. You don't have time. So you can say you're going to exercise, but you don't have time to exercise. That's why you're just going down. You just don't have any time. And then you need knowledge.
Okay.
You need knowledge. You have to know what to do. And I'm going to give you my plan. Ready? This is got next month's series. I'm giving you a little preview. I've been saying it for a while now. There's four things you got to have in order to be successful. And it's big thinking that leads to great results. It's a great study coming up May 1st, Sunday. You got to have a plan. And I'm operating out of a plan. What you see me doing today is part of a plan. Small groups, interactions, conversations, small groups. That leads to big opportunities. Next thing you got to have is a team. You got to have people in your life that help you do things. You're trying to do things on your own. Some of you, for example, you're trying to clean up your house. You can't clean. You don't know what you're doing. You need to save you some money, get you somebody in there to help you. Number three, you need to have self-confidence. Good God Almighty. I have a great sermon on that. It's coming up in May. If you don't believe in yourself, as a matter of fact, I have I'm tempted. There's a whole series of things I want to talk about in the second half of the year that tie to this self-confidence topic. My greatest challenge is self-confidence. Now, you may wonder about that, but it's the truth. I can easily question, doubt myself. Me and Diane can have a conversation. She can ask me a simple question. And if I'm not careful, my confidence, what? You think I'm not doing what? And one time, I'm still twitching right now. I did a series on Revelations. I'm still going to remind her. I hope she's watching. And I said, Dad, I think I'm going to do another series on Revelation. She said, it's going to be like the last one. You know what's tough about Revelations is because you really need to teach it in the class, because you got to, because people have to be there to catch all the pieces. Revelation is like, you ever seen those puzzles with a bunch of pieces, like 500 pieces?
That's a jigsaw puzzle.
Right. It's like that. And so if you're not there for the second part two, you don't know what I said in part one. I don't even talk about part seven. And you know, you got to have like 10 parts. It's a good book. Got a lot of great information, but it didn't come over well. So I tend to save that for classrooms and stuff like that. But my point is, you got to have self-confidence. And self-confidence, it can be challenging. What she said was true. You know, it was true. But my self-confidence is fragile sometimes. I can really start doubting myself. And then the last thing is, you got to have a deadline. In order to really change your life, When are you going to start school? When are you going to start working out? When are you going to start eating right? When are you going to start hanging with your spouse? When are you going to start all this? You know, so until you do that, you're not going to get there. But if you have no time, right? You don't have any time. And if you don't have knowledge, a lot of time you don't know what you're doing. You know, when I saw this, building programs. Now, I want you to imagine this. So here you are trying to change your life. You're trying to do great things. You got great visions. But you don't know what you're doing. You have no knowledge. We lived in apartments all my life. All my life. We never owned a house. I didn't know what a closing was. When we bought East Broad Street, I didn't know what a closing was. The guy told me, I always laugh about this. He says, Pastor Rick, we're going to have the closing on. He told me the date. And I hung up the phone. I said, okay. I didn't know what he said. I didn't know what he's talking about. So, see what you do when you don't know, right? You try to be smart. I called back and I said, when you say closing, what do you mean when you say it?
That's what we got two questions here we want to get in.
Yeah, but let me say this real quick. But that to me is what you need. I had to get knowledge. So here you are trying to build a building. Knowledge helps you. Time helps you. Go ahead. Which question?
One question. What would you advise to a couple who feels burdened with taking care of an elder parent that did not make good financial decisions, and now the children are concerned about their own financial future?
I think you have to have a come to Jesus meeting and kind of renegotiate the world, because you can't leave mom and daddy out there in the cold. I mean, hey, you can't. I mean, you just can't do that. I understand that it's not easy, but it wasn't easy raising you. I mean, they didn't kill you. They fed you. They didn't starve you to death. They took care of you when it was hard. So just because it's hard now doesn't mean that you have to walk away. You know, that's part of honoring your parents, I believe. But I think parents should be thankful when that happens. But sometimes families are trying to be independent and they need to unify. So you got four broke family members, four. Instead of buying one house and getting along and working together to build wealth like they do in other countries. You see them, they come over here. We're gonna bring my cousin over here. We're gonna start a place together. We're gonna start a store. And then when it grows, we're gonna call our other cousin and they're gonna come over here and start another store. And before you know what you got, a guy was on a plane and a guy told me this. This is true. I'm not making it up. This is what he said. And I'll let you guess where he was from, but that's what he said to me. He says, we're going to get the other cousin next. And then when that store grows, we, Ricky Temple, are going to bring another cousin and another cousin and another cousin. And then I said, what if they don't work hard? They better work hard. They know that we're helping them build this together. And we're going to pool the money. And then we're going to get another cousin. Here's what he told me. I thought, what a great attitude. We don't do that. You got four broke folks. Y'all need to get together, put your money together, and come with a plan. And everybody keeps their part of the bargain. And help mama. Don't give up mama and daddy.
Now, regarding your PTSD plan, the self-confidence, Rion, she said, do you think the lack of self-confidence keeps people from dreaming big or believing that they can be the one in their family to break generational situations or circumstances?
Absolutely, Rayon. I believe it. And I'm telling you, that's one of the reasons why you need to be exposed to bigger visions, bigger ways, new ways of doing things. You need to believe that God can give you a better way to connect with people. If you don't see it but one way, you think that's the only way it is. And so I do believe that. I think exposure lifts your vision and it makes everything different.
So on that note, what are, again, thinking about blind living, things we can't see or refuse to see, do you think that we live under the privileges that we have in terms of what God has promised? And how do we structure our lives in a way that we can have some sense of hope that we'll be able to have the life that he's promised us?
There is a verse in the Bible that I'm going to quickly look up here that I just love. It, you know, it's one of the things that Jesus said all the time. You know, he said, there are many things I desire to say unto you. Right? Mm. And I desire to tell you, but you're not able to hear them. You know, it's John chapter 16, verse 12. John 16, 12. There are things that you until you are exposed to it, until you see somebody that has good health, that has money. One of my deficits, Sheila, I didn't know anybody that was 65 years old and had money. Okay. I didn't know one college student. No, this is true. I didn't know personally one, not one. I lived a few blocks from USC in Los Angeles. I used to walk past USC, drive past it every day. I didn't know one college student I could name that was my friend. I didn't know anybody. So that exposure limited. I didn't know any readers. My mother didn't read to me. She when I was little bit, but she wasn't like a person who would read to you a lot. She read. She made sure I know how to read now. But in terms of how you sit down and read with your kids. So I didn't understand the joy of reading for years. I really didn't tap into it until I was about 16. That's when I really clicked over and found the power in reading. It changes your life. So to answer your question, I think those things help a person. I hope I answered the question. Did I? I got all excited.
Yeah, like how do we, you know, not live beneath our privileges that we have in terms of what God has promised us is, you know, a fulfilled life.
Exposure. One more time, exposure. And you've got to get around people who have a bigger definition of life, a bigger vision of life. It's not just about finding a man or a woman to hook up with. It's not just about sex. It's not just about blowing up and being some big person. You need somebody in your life that balances your vision, that makes you look at the world, not like a cartoon, but gives you a real view.
Back to reading, I won't ask you to share how many books you have, but maybe just that, like in your Kindle, do you have like how many? And do you read every day? I know you said last week that one of the practices that you had was, you know, you made this not, you know, with God that you were going to read the Bible once. Do you read every day?
Yeah, I read something every day. I'm always reading something. So I'm a big news hound. I read everything. I listen. I don't watch a lot of television. I'm very measured in that, but I do enjoy TV and media when I want to watch it. But I am a avid reader. I love to read.
Diane says, any hint on how many books you have?
Our lots. Hundreds of, I have hundreds, no, literally, I'm not making that, but hundreds.
Oh, I know.
Of books. And I would think my library in my book, like physical books, over 1,000, 1,500 maybe, probably.
Okay.
I gave away a few hundred the other day when I cleaned up. I gave some away, a lot away. But on my Kindle, a couple thousand. I mean, I have a lot of books, but a lot of that's research stuff. I have all categorized and organized and all these jazz. I'm a big research guy. So for me, if I see it, I buy it and I use it later. I don't always use it now, but I do read a lot. Diane says I read constantly, but I do read a lot. Yeah.
Well, she says you kind of like read encyclopedias, but.
Is that what you typed in there? Really? That's what she did. And that's true. So,
I don't know if someone has one question. We're like 8:13 and it's been fun. We've asked you a lot of questions, but it's great.
Well, let me just say this.
Wait a minute. We had Sheila here. Sheila said, honesty brings accountability, or at least it should bring accountability.
Yay, Sheila. Amen. Well said. Exactly. And I think that helps a lot. Let me say to you, next week, we're going to jump into another study, and I'll be right back here the same time next week. So tune in with a friend. If you like what you saw today, you can link it and send it to somebody and say, hey, I like that. So I'm going to link it and send it to somebody, and they can watch it too. So it's going to be online tomorrow. So you'll be able to do that. Next week, we talk about walking away from foolish temptations. There is a study in 2 Samuel chapter 11. It's a story of the sin of David when he had a relationship with Bathsheba. And I want to talk that through with you and show you. It's our last study in midweek on Samuel. We have two more on Sunday mornings if you want to kind of hear both sides of this study. I am amazed at how tempted I was to make foolish decisions, especially in this area. I've seen sexual temptation destroy more people than anything. It is really amazing. I think it's important for you to tune in, because we're going to talk about foolish thinking, foolish choices. We're going to talk about how you can avoid them. And so it'll be a powerful time. And if you want to be nosy, tune in. I may tell a few stories of my own. I'm going to tune in next week to see what Pastor Rick going to say. If he's going to confess, maybe like Sheila said, the truth. Well, let's talk about the truth next week. I'll see y'all then. It's been fun. Well, Sheila, you've been great.
One more thing, quick thing, Pastor. Jewel asked, do you have a lot of audio books, or do you buy more audio books than, you know?
No, I don't have more audio books. I probably got a few hundred audio books, but I listen and read. Because for me, if I'm riding or flying someplace, if I can listen to a book, I'll do that. I like the book on the Pharisee what I like with Kindle. This is a little geeky moment. I can listen to it on Kindle, right? And then I can read it on Kindle. And then if I have the audio and the audio book and the book, a little expensive, but if I get both, I can stop reading, get in my car, hit the button on my audio, and it will pick up where I stopped reading. And it says, if I stopped on page 16, when I get in the car, it's amazing. And it goes back and forth. So I just love it. I love the fact it helps me get through a lot of material. If I'm in bad traffic, I listen to a book. So that's how I get through a lot of stuff. Plus, what I need to do, Sheila, I'm saying that I really got to go. I need to show them how to read a book. I need to do a confession on how to read. Some of you read wrong. That's why you never get through books. You go to the table of contents real quick. You go to the table of contents. You look and find the stuff you like. Then you read for the major points in the book. Look for things that you like and start there first. Chapter one, maybe, the introduction, maybe. But after the introduction, feel free to jump around, move around. I like doing that. I'm a researcher, and it makes it fun. But I've got to let you go because I'm a minute
over. Sunday, you're going to the gathering on Sunday. You're going to be talking to us married people about what?
Married people. How in the world did your marriage get to where it is? And how do you get
11 o'clock in person?
How did your marriage get to where it is, and how you can get it to where you want it to be? And also remember the series on Samuel that is already for you. It's going to be digital at 9 o'clock. So if you want to see the part two or three from last week, it will be online. You'll be able to see that. And also you'll be able to on fourth Sunday, see the final part of that. Then first Sunday, we'll be back in church, first and second Sunday at 9 and 11. And then next Wednesday, we'll close this all out. Bye y'all. Thanks for the time. See you later.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Take care.